Oriental Crown Hotel, Lekki, Epe Expressway, Lagos, Nigeria. November 20th, 2016. 11:06 p.m. The massive metal gate remained shut, as though regarding them with suspicion. They waited while one of the thin, balding guards inspected the trunk of the car, ran an inspection mirror under their vehicle, and took down their license plate. When he was done, he signaled to his colleague on the other side of the gate to pull its maw open. Shigidi slowly slid the car through and drove to the right, as indicated by the frantic waving of another skinny and much more animated guard with considerably more hair. Shigidi parked the car in a convenient and compact space a few meters from the main foyer. "Let's get some food," Noma said as she put her hand into the crook of his arm. Determined to make the most of the night, they walked briskly up the stairs and into the building, Noma's heels clicking on the marble floor. The hotel lobby was a well-furnished and well-decorated chamber of conditioned air and artificial light. An array of bulbs beamed down white and yellow and orange light that reflected off the reflective floors and pillars and walls, giving the entire space an ethereal glow. On the far wall ahead of the entrance stood a framed explosion of colours, the images it depicted all bounded by a spineless network of thick black ink that made the entire piece look like a divine colouring book or a mind map with a shape like a vulva at the centre. A woman's figure below and a face and hands above, all connected to an assortment of images, dense iconography from religion, politics, technology, sexuality, history, music, biology, and so much more, all connected and layered and almost overwhelming. Dreamscape. It was art, in the early Afro-mysteric style. According to the manager, a smooth-talking Lebanese man with slick black hair who spoke fluent pidgin, it was the largest free-hanging oil-on-canvas painting in public display in Lagos. Shigidi knew Noma would want some time with it. It was one of her favourite things in the city, and admiring it had become a sort of pre-feeding ritual for her whenever they came to the Oriental. She always took her time studying the intricate pattern of networked lines that connected the disparate images. They walked to within touching distance. Noma rested her hand on Shigidi's shoulder, and they lingered. "Magnificent, isn't it?" The voice came from behind them. It was gentle and melodious, like the music that came from the slow dance of fingers on a finely tuned goye. They turned around slowly to face its owner, a tall, shapely woman in a royal blue bodycon dress. She had coffee and cream-coloured skin that was too even and smooth to have been bleached that way, and thick, dark braided hair. Her green eyes caught the lights frequently, revealing a different colour each time, as though it were a trick being performed by both her body and the building. She wore the kind of smile that was reserved for women who went by Big Madam, the kind of smile that, when coupled with the right quantity of Naira notes, could make anything happen in Lagos. Shigidi thought she was an improbable mosaic. She was too beautiful, her voice too euphonic, her manner too forward. A mamiwata working independently. A human with a particularly powerful protective spirit. Or just a woman whose wealth and circumstance had made her seem near divine. A tingle ran up his spine, and he was instantly suspicious, but not suspicious enough to be uninterested. "It is a Sebanjo," the woman said to them, still smiling her Lagos lubricant smile. "Yes, the manager told me it cost them a fortune," Noma said, smiling too. $1 million, he said. "I know he's lying, but it doesn't matter. It is still a pleasure to see such a beautiful thing in such an ugly place." Noma spoke with the kind of warmth typically reserved for old friends, even though Shigidi was sure she had never met this woman before. He had seen her use the same old friend tone on other people, who soon became lovers or prey. She had even used it on him, at first. Noma could be consumingly charming. It was part of her work philosophy, as she liked to remind him, and she seemed to instantly like this improbable woman, perhaps because of her confidence. So, will she be lover or prey, or both? Yes, a pleasure indeed, the woman said, extending her hand to Nama. I'm Omolara, and this is my husband, Rotimi. The man she gestured to with a tilt of her head was about 7 strides away, looking at a less impressive painting. He was dressed as glamorously as his wife, in an embroidered white kaftan and matching trousers, but lacked the same brilliance in his eyes or confidence in his smile. The kind of man Lagos would eat alive if he stumbled into the wrong corner of the city. He turned to address the group and raised his hands, mildly amused by the interaction his wife had orchestrated. He came up to them, kissed Noma's hand, and shook Shigidi's as Noma introduced them. Noma, the woman echoed, I've always thought that was a beautiful name. Do you mean what you said? You really think this hotel is ugly? No, the hotel is nice enough, Noma corrected. I meant Lagos. Lagos is an ugly city. Ah, so you are not from here. I should have known, and not because of your name. I don't like to guess these things based on tribal names, since Lagos belongs to all of us now. But from your attitude, you don't seem like a Lagosian. Well, no, I'm not from Lagos, Noma said, but I like it here. I always have. Even before it became this bustling, messy metropolis. I like its ugliness. It's a real kind of ugliness that I appreciate. It's always in the ugly and in-between places that you find the most pleasurable things. She flashed Omolara a smile like a knife's edge. I can't disagree with that, Omolara replied, drawing closer. Noma, can my husband and I buy you and your... She paused, waiting for Noma to indicate her relationship with Shigidi. Partner, Noma obliged. The woman and Shigidi exchanged a look. Yes, of course, your partner. Can we buy you and your partner a drink? Noma nodded at Shigidi and twirled her index finger, signaling that these were the first targets for the night. Upstairs at the bar, she said. I hear there is an excellent live band playing Fela classics tonight. Pray it is them. Of course, Omolara agreed, and the curve of her smile compressed into a ringed pout. Her hazel eyes flashed in the light. She knew Noma was flirting with her and was making it clear that she welcomed it. They walked to the elevator at the end of the lobby hall, a powerful quartet of beauty, flamboyance, and sensuality, drawing stares from passing staff and patrons like a four-sided magnet. Once they were in the claustrophobic embrace of the elevator, Omolara pulled Noma in for a kiss. It was a hasty thing. There was no artifice to it, just raw, frenzied need. Noma kissed her back fervently, and they clung together like a compound name. Her husband, Rotimi, pressed himself against Noma from behind and started to kiss her neck. She threw her head back, surfacing from Omolara's lips, and laughed, enjoying their attentions. Then she turned her head and flashed Shigidi a look of invitation. She reached out, taking his lower jaw between her thumb and index finger, and she shook his head like she was trying to loosen him up and get him to join in. But he was still uncomfortable with his new body and with the blatant and sometimes unexpected eruptions of desire that Noma seemed to be able to elicit from humans. He could sense some architecture of wrongness to the situation that kept him at bay. But she was insisting with her eyes, so he finally relented and took a small step forward to join them, slipping a hand between Noma and Omolara to cup a full breast. The overabundance of heat and lust in that small space threatened to overwhelm him, and Noma wasn't even manipulating the emotional energy around them to achieve it. She had taught him how to recognize the faint yellow and orange aura of her influences, as well as the vibration in the air whenever she exerted her power. Shigidi was no longer sure if they were the seducers or the seduced, but once his hand touched Omolara's flesh, he couldn't bring himself to pull away. Not with Noma's encouraging hand on his, egging him on, obviously eager to claim the 2 lusty, beautiful spirits that had come to them so willingly. The 4 of them never reached the bar. They arrived on the 9th floor instead, where Omolara and Rotimi had a penthouse suite. They spilled out of the elevator in a fluid mass of heavy breaths, roving limbs and wet kisses, and flowed into the expansive luxury suite. They all fell into the bed like it was an ocean, and Shigidi watched as Noma yielded to Omolara and Rotimi's hands. There was a learned aspect to their manipulations, especially Omolara's. Hands that seemed just as fluent in the language of pleasure as Noma's. Omolara buried her face in Noma's bosom, and Rotimi undressed, rolled off onto the other side of the bed, lifted Noma's dress until it bunched up around her waist, and eased himself into her with one smooth and deliberate thrust. She gasped. Shigidi let his mind drift as her moans and pleasure intensified, hypnotically drawing him deeper into the tangle of flesh and mad desire. He threw off his suit jacket and slid forward on the bed. Omolara reached for him, cupping his face and expertly guiding it to her mouth for a kiss as steady and intense as the nighttime crashing of waves along Bar Beach. Shigidi was suddenly thrown into a haze of his own pleasure. His eyes rolled back behind shut eyelids as he let Omolara's mouth work its magic, reminding him of the night he had first met Noma. The kiss held. It held for so long he began to feel like he was drowning. And then, as if in a nightmare, he realized he was. He couldn't breathe. The clay of his lungs felt swollen and thick, like there was an invisible hand inside his throat, squeezing his windpipe. He began to struggle, pushing against her and kicking out as he tried to wrestle his mouth away from Omolara's, but he was trapped. Increasingly desperate, he threw a panicked punch right into her abdomen. She detached with a muted whimper, rolled backwards off the bed and onto her feet, snarling. The sense of discomfort and wrongness that he had felt since he had first laid eyes on her magnified tenfold. Something had gone very wrong with the night's business. He scrambled backwards on his hands and butt until he was off the bed, eyes still trained on Omolara. Shit! 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 This was what they used to call, back when he was in the spirit company, an unforeseen process deviation. Noma had jerked her head up at the sound of the scuffle, eyes widened and cleared of passion. When she saw Shigidi and Omolara roll away on opposite sides of the bed, she grabbed the headboard and tried to pull herself out from under Rotimi, enscaling her skin as she did. But she barely budged. Shigidi saw her struggling to get free. She let her wings loose, ripping the sheets and bedding beneath her, as well as what was left of her dress, as she tried to rise into the air. But she was unable to rise more than half a foot, unable to detach herself from Rotimi's slumped bulk. He had stopped thrusting and now lay atop her, still as a statue, his tongue lolling out like a dead lizard. Realization hit Shigidi like a bucket of cold water to his face. This had to be a magon, one of the oldest and most powerful categories of juju. A special binding magic which was effective against humans, gods, and spirits alike. It was most often invoked to bind the bodies of cheating spouses to their adulterous partners, but its core function, an ability to entangle fundamental physical and spirit particles to each other, had been taken advantage of by the Orishas and Babalawos alike for centuries. He could not believe they had fallen for it. Magun! Fucking magun! Noma! Shigidi shouted to his pinned-down partner, without taking his eyes off Omolara. It's magun! You've been locked to that! He glanced at the hardened, still figure on top of her. Thing! Noma's throat strained, and her mouth opened like she was trying to scream, but nothing came but silence. She kept trying, and even though her mouth was still moving, lips trembling as they resisted the force that was rigidifying her from within, she'd been silenced. The magon had not only fixed her to the creature, it was locking down her entire body. Even her wings barely moved anymore, and she slowly sank back into the softness of the bed. She would be unable to move or talk, to use her powers or do anything, until he broke the magon and separated her from Rotimi. He tried to think of his next move. Omolara kept her eyes locked on him and started to expand, like she was being inflated or pumped full of some kind of thick fluid. Her creamy skin started to desiccate and flake away. "Shigiri," Omolara said, glaring at him. The gentleness of her voice, like her skin, was melting away and now hit him like the roar of flooding rivers. "What made you think you could break your contract and run away with this demon whore?" Her raging river voice carried an undercurrent of scorn. She had almost completely shed her skin, and with it the woman she had claimed to be, if such a person ever existed. The figure molting from the false shell was corpulent, grounded by a round, heavy belly that tumbled down to her thick, dimpled thighs. Thighs that sank into the ground like banana tree stalks. Grand rolls of fat hung loosely from her body like fleshy drapes. Her ears had been cut off, leaving jagged, scarred edges, and her hair was woven into tight cornrows that ran parallel to each other, meeting at the center of her head in a solid spike of plaited hair. It was Oba, first wife of Shongo, and head of spirit resources at the spirit company he had called home for so long. Beads of sweat seeped out of the pores of his face and forehead. His former employers had come for him. They had been tricked by elaborate disguise juju and a golem-like puppet, which Shigiri suspected was made from the same clay as he was, but only animated temporarily and by a less potent force. The magan had probably been kneaded directly into the clay, embedded deeply in the elementary spirit particles of what had become Rotimi, and concealed with the same juju that Oba had used on herself. Shigiri was surprised that neither he nor Noma had perceived it. Every manipulation of spirit particles leaves a faint trace of its influence, and he should have been able to sense the imprint of magan on the Rotimi thing at the very least, or the cloak of concealment on the Omolara disguise, like a whiff of perfume riding the sea breeze. No one can touch or make a thing without leaving a fingerprint, not even spirits. But they had missed it. It had to be cutting-edge juju, something unfamiliar to them both. He had sensed something unusual about Omolara and Rotimi from the moment they had met, but his discomfort had not been enough. And Noma was still in a diminished state, so they had ended up in this precarious position, their undoing at hand. But he had tasted exquisite freedom and desire and pleasure and beauty, all the things that had been denied him for so long. Shigiri was not about to give them up without a fight. "You weren't treating me very well," he said, shifting his feet to blade his body towards Oba, his left foot sliding forward into a stable stance. "So I found an alternative way to survive." "With this foreign demon?" Oba snapped. "Business is bad for everyone. You got a fair share." Shigiri shook his head and forced out a laugh, using the opportunity to take a sweeping look around the room and through the sliding glass panels that opened to the balcony below, where the filthy water of the Lagos Lagoon lay, undulating softly. He didn't see anything, but he had a growing feeling that there were others nearby, waiting, watching, protecting Oba. Shongo would never send his wife without backup, especially after anything that was not human. "Fair?" Shigiri asked, reflecting her scorn. "We must have very different definitions of fair if you think it was fair for your husband to take more than half of everything we brought in for himself."
"It is company policy."
"Of course you say that. Monkey de work, baboon de chop. And who made that policy again, hmm? You and your husband, Abi? You can't possibly think we were okay with that." Oba shook his head.
"You can't question Shongo, huh? You should have known there would be consequences for your actions."
"So what are you going to do?" Shigiri asked, jutting out his jaw. "Force me to come back to work for you?" Oba, naked and unshamed, simply smiled.
"No. We're going to kill you."
A rope woven of wind wrapped itself around Shigiri's left ankle at the speed of a malicious thought. Before he could even look down to see it, he was dragged to the ground and pulled toward the balcony. He swept past Oba's feet in a flash, his hands flailing and clawing at air, her laughter ringing in his ears. The glass panel of the sliding door and the steel frame of the balcony exploded when he hit them on his way out of the room. Everything was a blur. When he finally stopped moving, he was face down and staring into the dark body of water, waveform shimmering like ghosts where they flitted on its surface and caught the moonlight. He was hovering above the Lagos lagoon, buffeted on an invisible, flowing barrier like a cushion of wind. He tried to calm himself and slow his breathing as he struggled to his feet, balancing awkwardly on the invisible wind floor. Standing, he saw Oya, the Orisha of winds and storms, his former direct supervisor and sister wife to the corpulent and deceitful Oba. She was suspended in the air a few meters away from him. She had a plain, powder-blue wrapper wound tightly around her body, tied off just above her breasts, and red beads on her hands, neck, and ankles. With the new body Noma had given Shigiri, he knew he could take her out with one clean strike if he could only close the distance between them enough to land it. Oya gestured with her hands, and the carpet of wind beneath him spread out and folded up into an invisible box of dynamic air and spirit particles, trapping Shigiri. He threw himself at the barrier, shoulder first, but it didn't work. He only bounced back, falling to his knees. The box of wind around him warped and reshaped, extruding an array of barely visible fists and palms and oddly shaped appendages that came at him from everywhere, punching, slapping, hitting. Shigiri was buffeted on all sides. He blocked Oya's ferocious assault with his forearms, using all the speed and grace his new body afforded him, until suddenly, mid-motion, he felt a flare of pain, sharp and hot. He screamed and heard Oba's answering laughter from the balcony, even through the wall of wind and the fog of pain. He looked down to see a vicious arrowhead crackling with bright cerise spirit particles sprouting from his abdomen. A bloodstain began to blossom across his shirt like an evil flower. Then he saw another. And another. Fuck. There was no more pain, or less, with each flower of blood that bloomed on his torso. He had reached the threshold after the second hit. There was only surprise. Surprise because he recognized the precise cut of the hard-edged arrowheads, the signature color of the malicious juju that had guided them along their paths to him, the careful craftsmanship of their wooden shafts. He turned to see the Oshoshi, Hunter Orisha he had once called his friend, dressed in his sleeveless black war attire, festooned with red and white ivory and wood-carved charms, his bow lowered. He was naturally tall and thin, but with his back bent and his face gaunt, as he stood beside the cackling Oba, he seemed even thinner than the last time they had gone drinking together. Oshoshi looked away when Shigiri made eye contact with him. Ah! I cannot believe this bastard ever shared palm wine with me. Fucking spineless. Another fist of wind smashed into Shigiri's head, spinning his jaw before he could complete the thought. His vision smeared. He closed his eyes, but flickering flowers of light appeared beneath his eyelids. A woolen echo filled his head, silencing much of the world, and he fell face first onto the carpet of wind beneath him. Lying there were three arrows in his chest, every nerve of his body forming its own unique orchestra of agony. He drifted into something like a dream as time itself seemed to disappear. Barely holding on, he searched his mind for something that his consciousness could hold on to. Noma. I must help Noma. We are supposed to watch out for each other. He ran through everything she had taught him, things he had only recently come to understand. One of the first was that working for yourself, you need to know your strengths and weaknesses. So they had made a list together, highlighting their unique divinities, and she had made notes for him, helping him understand himself better, bringing him to new realizations as she taught him new skills. Now, engulfed by pain, he searched and screened and indexed and collected and organized the relevant realizations in his mind and repeated them to himself. I am made of spirit clay and animated by Olorun's breath. Spirit clay is a fine-grained material that allows spirit particles to bind with metal oxides and organic matter. I have dominion over the subconscious, the imaginary, the formless. All clays on every side of reality are plastic due to their water content and can become hard and brittle when dry. I can manipulate fear, even my own. Spirit clay, like all other clays, has remarkable absorption capacity. Clay, plastic, absorption. He repeated the words in his mind like a mantra until they crystallized. He reached deeper into his own mind, probing at the threads of his fear. Fear of pain, fear of death, fear of losing everything Noma had given him. He seized each fear when he found it and began to rearrange them into something new. He reimagined himself as strong, bold, standing tall, immune to pain, and he remodeled his fear until it matched that vision in his mind. When the structure of his new mental state felt solid, he opened his eyes and felt a rush of cold, clear, constructed confidence. In a sudden surge, sound returned to the world. He knew exactly what he was capable of enduring, and he knew what he needed to do. I have to free Noma. And that meant he either needed to destroy the wielder of the Magon or the puppet through which it had been applied. Battered and wounded, Shigidi rose again. First to a single knee, and then back up to his feet, arms spread out for stability on the carpet of wind. He tensed his body, and, using the trick Noma had taught him, he imagined himself rock solid, the spirit particles extracting the water from his body and turning his malleable clay flesh hard as stone. He punched a hole in Oya's wall of wind, creating a vortex that spun out toward the hotel balcony. Oshoshi's eyes widened, and Oba stopped laughing. A trio of arrows came in quick succession, whizzing past his head and shoulders. Shigidi slipped, ducked, and then used the spring from the motion to launch himself through the hole in the wind box before it could close, sailing through the air as gracefully as a gazelle, tattered shirt, arrows, blood, and all. Oshoshi and Oba retreated clumsily, staggering backward into the room. Shigidi landed on his feet in front of them, hitting the balcony with a force that sent a spiderweb of cracks through the floor. Noma was still pinned to the bed. Shigidi took Oba by the throat and squeezed, the blood vessels on his arms bulging, the now solid muscles straining. He was unwilling to yield even as Oshoshi recomposed himself and stabbed Shigidi's sweaty and bloody back with an arrow. It broke on impact. Shigidi's will, like his body, had become stone. Oya followed him into the room, seized his feet with a tempest of ropes, and even threw a whirlwind noose around his neck, but he had hardened himself, completely prepared against a multitude of powers, and he did not yield. Oba's eyes bulged in her head as he squeezed tighter. The whites of the naked river goddess's eyes began to turn red as they filled with the blood from burst vessels and the horrible realization that she was going to die. From nowhere, a thunderous bolt of lightning, broader than a man, pounded into Shigidi. He collapsed onto the floor and rolled away, his body spasming as Shongo materialized before them, encased in a column of white-hot light. The Orisha of Thunder and CEO of the Spirit Company was drawn to full height and brimming with rage. Shongo was wearing a brown agbada made of ashuoke, with vermilion flame and azure lightning embroidered into it. The stitching danced electric. His phylum drooped lazily to one side. He held a broad machete with a translucent blade, its hilt carved to resemble a tiger, and his eyes burned as white as the light around him. Of course, he was upset at the way this whole business had turned out, especially the attempted murder of his first wife.
Shigidi!
Shongo bellowed as Oba coughed and gasped for breath, kneeling on the floor behind him.
What is the meaning of this madness?
Madness? Shigidi pointed an accusing finger at his former boss as he rose to his feet hastily and scrambled to the edge of the bed where Noma lay, eyes straining, still locked in her own body. Shigidi's heart threatened to burst out of his chest, but he had already started to reweave the fresh fear that had manifested in his mind. His thoughts were racing almost as rapidly as his heart was beating, but even in the chaos and in the process of weaving, an idea was starting to coalesce in his mind.
Tell me, is it madness not to lie down and allow your deceitful wives and their treacherous lackey to kill me? Huh? Or was it madness to take an opportunity for a better life? Huh? Tell me, which one is the madness?